Welcome back to Healing Trauma. I'm Lynn Fraser. As we are learning about becoming friends with our mind, it's important that we learn about brain development. Developmental trauma refers to the impact of our childhood experiences on the development of our brain and our nervous system. Human beings have a need to be connected with each other, and a lack of connection is experienced, especially by children, as a survival level threat. We need food and shelter, and we need social connection. We need to know that we matter. We know now how important it is to have real human connection at all ages. Many people didn't grow up feeling connected. Some people were abused or experienced extreme emotional neglect. These experiences have an impact on the developing brain and our nervous system. Some people experienced extreme emotional neglect and other kinds of abuse. Many more people experienced emotional neglect of feeling like we didn't matter to anybody. The effect of this kind of experience is that we disconnect from ourselves and we start to turn against ourselves. We blame ourselves. One of the major mechanisms to protect ourselves is disconnection. We find some way to leave emotionally. Maybe it's daydreaming or fantasy. Maybe we move into anger. We have many ways to accomplish that. One of the impacts of disconnecting from ourselves is that we then don't have a sense of our own value. You might be getting the message from people in your life that you're not even worth being taken care of being paid attention to. When we don't have a sense of being seen and protected, it's devastating for a child. We can't stand to be with that, and we find a way to handle it. We blame ourselves for what's going on in the environment. It's too risky to blame our parents. We need to maintain some kind of hope. If this is something we're doing wrong, if we could be smarter or quieter or better, we would be loved and protected and attended to. These are the dynamics that are going on for a child who's abused or neglected. And this is the birthplace of core deficiency stories. We form beliefs based on the experiences we have. If we've had the experience of being unloved, we may develop a perception or a belief that we were unlovable, unworthy. These deficiency stories are a way for a child to try to understand what's happening to them and to put control in our hands. If I could just do something different, then my parents would protect me, they would see me, they would love me, they would stop hurting me. The truth is that it's our parents who are not protecting us. They're not seeing us for whatever reasons of their own. And that's related to their own trauma. If we understood that, we would have to admit we have no control over that, and that's even scarier. It's even worse than believing that somehow we're at fault. 20 years ago, Western science discovered neuroplasticity. Our brains develop throughout our whole life, and they develop in response to our experiences. Developmental trauma refers to the impact of abuse and neglect on the developing brain. Children who are connected and cared for and feel loved have neural connections that reflect that. Children who feel alone, who experience a lot of fear, all of that is reflected in their nervous system and their brain development. Certain pathways in our brain don't develop. The amazing discovery of neuroplasticity in the brain means that it's not too late. We can still develop those pathways now. As adults, we might blame ourselves for the brain development of childhood. It doesn't make sense that we blame ourselves because we haven't had the opportunity to develop the pathways of trust. All of the adaptations are an attempt to connect. We're trying to connect and stay connected with our caregivers. As we get older, we're trying to stay connected in relationships with other people, friendships, social networks, community, people at work. But the conundrum now is that we're not only not getting what we do need, we're also hurt by people. That leads to further isolation, which cements the idea that we're not lovable. Nobody cares about me. Nobody has protected me. I'm all on my own. We don't feel attended to, attuned to. We don't feel heard. When we do feel safe, we're able to be open. We are authentic, and we're not worried about being judged. Many people don't have that experience. We haven't had the felt experience of being met, of being known. Feeling safe is both an absence of threat and a feeling of being connected. This is why it doesn't work so well to protect ourselves into an isolated, lonely life. We still need connection with other people. That's built right into our system. When we've had abuse or neglect, our system remains on yellow alert. We're always scanning. We're hypervigilant for danger. This is how the mechanism works. It's not that we're doing something wrong or that we're failing somehow. This is how the human survival system works to protect us and connect us with other people. We can't expect to have a healthy brain and nervous system development and to trust other people and to feel safe with other people if that has not been our experience. And because of neuroplasticity, our brains will change with new experiences. There is always a way to work with things that are troubling us and to develop healthier patterns to let go of experiences from the past and to heal from them. The disconnection driven by abuse and neglect is a major dysfunction in our thinking process. Our nervous system drives so much compulsion, so much catastrophic thinking. It really gets us in trouble. Understanding how this works is essential in healing. What does freeze look like in modern life? Often it's dissociation. We're not really present. We suppress what we can't afford to feel. We're in denial. For most of my adult life, I would have said that I was calm. After I started healing trauma, I realized that in fact I was frozen. I was shut down. This kind of numbing effect, this way that we disconnect from ourselves and our life, has a huge cost. It's like we're living a half life. Oftentimes people are anxious, depressed. We know that something's wrong. We know that we need to connect with other people. But we're stuck. We're frozen. We may be addicted. Food, alcohol and other drugs, screens, gambling, shopping, overwork. Addiction is a rampant part of our society, and it's a response to trauma. It is our system helping us to escape. Some of the ways we numb out are approved socially. A glass of wine every night after work. Binge-watching Netflix episodes. Shopping. There is a continuum here with a lot of these activities. Often they are useful as a way to relax. When it's driven by this fear and need for suppression, urgency to not experience what's going on in our body, in our mind, in our life, then it has a lot of power over us. It's gone from being a source of enjoyment or a way to let off some steam to being a source of suffering. The antidote is mindfulness. It's tuning in to what's going on in our whole experience. The thing about the freeze response, about numbing, is that it works. Unless it turns into an extreme addiction, people tend not to notice so much. In recent years, there's been some research on loneliness. People are saying loneliness, social isolation, is the new smoking because it has an effect on our lifespan. It certainly has an effect on our happiness. The reason that we freeze is because we're not too sure that we can afford to feel what's going on, that we can afford to see clearly. Some of that has to do with the inner critic. We shame and condemn ourselves. Many people feel very aggressive towards themselves. We need the direct experience that it's okay to be with ourselves, to be present to our lives, to know what we're feeling emotionally, physically, energetically. Let's do a practice of that right now. This is a simple practice of looking into what does the heart know. Bring your attention to the whole of your body from head to toes. Notice what your body feels like right now. Adjust your position so that you're comfortable. Relax your face, your neck and shoulders, your arms, down through your whole body, your chest, your back, down through your legs and feet. Bring one or both hands up to cover your heart center, the area in the center of your chest. Notice that sensation of warmth. Allow yourself to tune in. Be attuned to your own experience right now. We have an intelligence in the brain, in the head, in our gut instincts, our stomach area, and in the heart. And as we sit with this, we're asking, what does my heart know that I might want to know? This is not a question for the brain and the head. We're bringing our attention to our heart center, bringing our hand to the heart, and listening. Notice your body. Notice your breath. Notice the warmth of your hand. What does your heart know? We've been working with the freeze response, numbing out. What does your heart know about that? Why was it necessary? And why might it still be necessary? Notice in your experience right now if it's okay for you to be connected with your own heart center. To be present to whatever it is that's here. There's no right or wrong way to do this. There's no right or wrong answers. We're simply tuning in and noticing what is the wisdom in the heart. What does the heart know? Notice if you get carried off in a train of thought generated in the brain and the head. And if that's the case, that's fine. But just bring yourself back. Feel your hand on your heart, the warmth, the support of that. And for as long as you like, and as many times as you like to come back to it, put your hand on your heart. Let yourself know that you're open to knowing more. What does your heart know that you might know? In day 7, we're going to work with the inner critic and perfectionism, one of the major barriers to knowing what our heart knows. This mechanism of shaming and being aggressive with ourselves. I hope you can join me for that.